This is Guardian Radio, your station for up-to-the-minute news, intelligent, interactive, and engaging conversation. 96.9 FM. The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Network.
Morning this morning and welcome back to Guardian Radio 96.9 FM, your station for fresh news, smart talk all day. It is Wednesday, the 18th of January, 2023. And you are on the clock with Erin Green and Cecil Newry on our regular Wednesday mashup session between On the Clock and Guardian Radio AM. Good morning, Mr. Newry. How are you doing?
Good morning this morning. It's always good to be with you, Erin, and thank you very much for that nice introduction. How are you doing today?
Are you all right, you know?
You're okay?
A little cold.
I see you all wrap up.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, you have scarf on
it. It's cold out there.
It ain't really cold, man.
No, it's very cold.
It's like 65, 670.
That's cold.
That's cold, okay.
That's extremely cold.
Yeah.
I mean, that's crisis level cold.
Crisis.
Yeah. We see we dropped even lower than that the other night.
Yeah, that's a problem.
That's a crisis.
That was a problem.
And I can tell you why.
Yeah.
Because our homes are not built to deal with that type of weather.
What do you mean?
What I mean is the homes are not built to like keep out the cold. They're built to let the breeze go through and keep the house cool.
You mean the cracks?
I mean something like that.
Yeah.
And it's a hurricane. You got to let the wind blow through.
I understand.
You got to know how to... See, that's the next thing. You got to know how to build on the islands.
Mm.
And you got to know how to build on the part of the island that you're on. You got to understand how the elements work, how they operate on that island, in that space. All of those things are things we used to know. All of those things are things that have been lost to us, the majority of us.
Mm-hmm.
But this week, it caused a big, big problem.
You reminded us, you think?
Yeah, because there are tons of people who were in homes that just don't provide the insulation necessary to deal with any 57, 60 degree temperature. So a whole bunch of people who were left sort of stranded, abandoned.
So just, but that same topic, that train of thought, what happens to the Joneses? What happens to the pet dogs? I mean, who outside braving the elements?
But this is what I'm saying. What happens to the unhoused people, the people that are not living in regular homes, right?
Yeah.
That's the question. What happens to them? Is there an emergency protocol? Are there sufficient shelter spaces to pull people in off the cold?
We have shelters.
Out the cold. I mean, not...
I mean, school going on, the shelters is when school is closed and you house them inside the house.
Those are hurricane shelters. We barely have any of them, but we also barely have any of the other type of shelters either, right? See, look here, it is 2023. 10 years ago, in March, we participated in the Agribusiness Expo out on that Gladstone Road compound field. And on the Saturday night, I think it was the 13th, late in the night, we were standing there, finishing up sales, right? Watching the people sort of filter out. And you could see your breath in front of you.
What?
That's how cold it was. You could see your breath in front of you. So imagine now, there are unhoused people, whether it's due to the effects of Dorian, other storms and extreme weather events, or the pandemic and the collapse of the economy during that time.
Mm-hmm.
People are stuck out in this cold weather with no support. Or even when there is support available, the question is, can they access it? Do they know about it? Can they organize themselves to get there? Do they qualify? Because the shelters that do exist are for specific purposes or specific demographics, right? And so this is actually a crisis level issue.
I never heard anyone have this conversation before, like for the elements, that is. If it rains plenty, if it gets cold and chilly, is there an entity that gives support to such vulnerable people?
And is there an entity that is obligated to support such people? And there is this called the government. Now, the question is, has the government organized itself sufficiently to be able to render that assistance when necessary in the ways, right, like both equal and equitable access? Can the government actually do it in its current structuring? And that's the big, big question. Because if they cannot do it, what they need to be doing is encouraging, organizing. Even I like the words that Minis use, you know, they were such strong words, like compel.
Compel.
You know, remember we're compelling employers to break the law?
Mm-hmm.
Compel and urge, you know, private sector to partner with civil society and the state to put out a real proper sort of weather mitigation plan for the most vulnerable people out there. You could imagine people who have moved from the family islands to New Providence, have limited family in New Providence, and are then rendered sort of economically vulnerable, unhoused, because of some issue, personal, collective work issue, right? And they have no support on island, can't get back to the family island. Doesn't make sense to get back to the family island. Worse if you couple it with a health issue, right? People are moving to New Providence because the resources necessary to deal with their health issues, right, the way that they have to shift their lives, are not available on the family island.
Mm-hmm.
What happens to that person when they are rendered incapable of taking care of themselves, whether temporarily or on a longer scale? Where are the real support services to deal with that? I think at some point you acknowledge that the government is overwhelmed.
Well, definitely the government is overwhelmed. You can tell even for the day they transferred 40 persons to Doctors Hospital because the Princess Margaret could not handle it.
Right. And I first of all, I want to know how could you, like, I appreciate the declaration. You have to say it. You have to declare what's happening. How could you then, though, get up and how could you be the Minister of Health and have to sit and watch staff, either directly under you or related through the healthcare system to you, get up and say things like that, like, oh, we had to have an emergency, we have a crisis, when you've been touting for weeks and months now that everything is okay, that everything is all right, right? Like, there's nothing really urgent. But we all know the urgent, the dire state of not just PMH, but the entire healthcare system.
I'm just praying that we don't have no large COVID outbreak, because if that happens again, and knowing that nothing is, no, we don't have a COVID issue at all, I don't think, at this present time.
Yeah.
But imagine if we get an influx of about 40 people in Princess Margaret Hospital. What happens then?
And for the most part, the crisis wasn't the COVID numbers themselves. The crisis was you were already overwhelmed before the COVID numbers arose. You were already having issues with providing basic services, right? You were already having issues with scheduling surgeries and keeping people on timelines. You were already having issues with that. COVID just exacerbates what we know is already a problem, you know? And even that in and of itself is a problem. Why is it only a problem when prominent people can't get health care? Why is it only a problem when prominent people's family members can't access the services that should be available to all? It don't really matter when it's just poor people. You know, it don't really matter when it's just family island people.
I hear you. I hear you. But anyway, let's welcome Ian Munnings, who's joined us finally. Ian Munnings, who's our resident guest host on Mashup Wednesdays. I just want to welcome you. How you doing, Ian?
Pleasure to be here, CA.
Good.
Hey, Aaron. It's a Mashdown Wednesday. I'm liking the conversation that we're talking about, talking about inadequate services that are not being rendered to the Bahamian people. We are looking at the family islands in itself. and looking at the possibilities of maybe having a smaller hospitals down there that can help those persons. But we realized the influx of persons post-Dorian to Nassau, it's overwhelming. I mean, so we have to think about a strategic plan to start to get those persons to migrate back to the islands. And in order for that to happen, I think that we have to grant some opportunities for those persons to want to go back to those family islands. I don't think the challenge is they don't want to go home. I think they love being home. They don't love the fact that they have to go through all this hustle and bustle. It takes them about an hour to get to the mall with all of the traffic. You know, these people want to get back at what they know life is. But we have to create an environment that is conducive for them to go back home. I think that a lot of tourists that have been fluctuating into our country, they now are finding themselves on these family islands. They're now partaking in purchasing land and bringing their families back to the Bahamas, to these particular islands. So we have to then send to the Bahamian people, in a sense, that, you know, going to the island is not all bad. It needs infrastructure. It needs some things to be developed. And we have to do it as a country to understand that we have 700 islands, reefs, and keys, most of them unoccupied. Some of the major big islands, like you can find in the southern Bahamas, like Miguana and Andres and places of that nature. Even Eleuther is now starting to boom a tourist. So we have to think about it as a strategic plan. What is the plan for the Bahamas going forward future? And then we look at the healthcare here. Like you said, it's about who can afford from who can afford. As long as it's the poor people that are being affected, it's not a problem until it reaches the door to the people that are wealthy and the people that have the advantages of flying out of the Bahamas and going and finding medical resources elsewhere.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's a big issue in the papers this week. A response, you see my fingers in the air, quotation, a response to the water crisis in Eleuther. Mm. And I call it a water crisis because it's 2023.
Yeah.
It's 2023. I should never read an article that says that the company contracted to manage the facility doesn't have staff posted at the facility. It's 2023. Mm. But what's worse is the response from the minister responsible for Family Island Affairs.
The flippant response.
Right, which is, yeah, it's taken care of. Like, it's dealt with. How did you deal with it? You don't think that you need to come to us and tell us how you rectified the situation where water and sewage staff are notified by the general public, there's something wrong. Then water and sewage staff have to go to the facility, check it out, and then they got to contact the company contracted to provide the service to tell them there's something wrong with the service they're providing. Mm. You haven't told us how you're going to rectify that. Mm. See, I can need you to tell me how you're going to rectify that. In the same way, I'm going to need the officer responsible for traffic to tell me how you can get people to stop turning left on red. I just need you to be able to tell me how you gonna do it.
Put the signs up. The reality is that with the crossings of the road and all of the indications of where we should turn and where we shouldn't turn, the Ministry of Works is fundamentally responsible for that duty. Mm-hmm. You look at the conditions of the current roads that we have in New Providence. I'm not speaking about the family islands now. We're talking about New Providence, the most inhabited island. We have the problems of these major potholes that are, I call them swimming pools, that are in the roads. And if it's not that, we're talking about who assesses the areas when it rains or we have a little bit of rain to understand that we need drainages or we need blowers or we need persons to be cleaning those places. Who's responsible for that? The reality is the buck has to stop someplace. The people are very, very agitated at this moment because we're saying to you is the basic hanging fruits we need to see, and if we see that, then we're okay with it.
Look here, there's a gentleman in New Providence right now that I know. I know him from around the place, like Johnson Road. I know him from Montague Ramp, right? And I saw when they were repairing the sidewalks or rebuilding the sidewalks on Wolf Road, right outside of, they call it Quintine Alley, I think.
Quintine Alley.
Right, mm-hmm. Right where Jerome Fitzgerald's office was, right, his PLP office was. Mm-hmm. And I asked one of the men who were working on the project, where's the drain going to go? Say, where's the drain going?
In the middle of the road.
So he tells me, like, the boss over there. So when I see the boss, I know the gentleman. I don't know his name, but I know him, right? See, he's a senior man to me. I'm not, like, old enough to be my daddy, but still senior man to me. And I ask him, where are y'all putting the drain? Look here, I know that man's still mad at me.
Of course.
I just want to say good morning to you, so don't be mad at me. And don't be mad at me that I'm having this conversation on the radio. Because I could have seen the space needed more drains. And the truth is, I wanted to say to you, but not to embarrass you in the public space, why wouldn't you just sit down and refuse to do the job until they put what you know is the proper drainage necessary for that area? At what point will the real technical skill, right? Will the people doing the actual work refuse to do shoddy job in an inadequate way? Because you were chosen because of your familiarity with the area. You were chosen because of your expertise. Why wouldn't you use your expertise to protect the Bahamian people and say, boss man, it's been 20 years with this particular system. It ain't working. We need to change it. And I sitting right here, I have the contract. I have signed it. And I not doing the work until y'all bring a proper plan. And if you try run me raggy, I going to take it to the public.
The public don't care.
The public care to
trade
us
in
here.
I'm sure.
Noise. I'm sure the public is.
The public don't care.
The public is furious about the situations because we're looking at if it rains about 5 minutes. Let's say 5 minutes here in New Providence.
And you just drive through it.
No. We realize that the water's downtown, etc. Pine Gardens, etc. You can get a jet ski and you can
swim. Anyone stop going downtown?
Has anyone stopped? They're not going to stop going downtown.
No one cares.
But the problem about it is that somebody has to be held accountable.
Ooh.
Now, if you inherited a situation, that's just fine. But that's not stopping you from dealing with the matter.
They plan to deal with it.
You have to.
Okay, watch.
It is a mandate. You have to.
It's 2023.
That's my point.
2024 when you're here. 2024 when you're here on the radio with me, we can talk about this again.
But listen, I'm looking at the people saying, you know what?
The people don't care.
This is what we want.
The people don't want that.
You can do what you want to do, but we expect that this thing's to happen.
I am concerned that you're putting words in the people's mouth. There's no people who ever came and protest and say, hey, this need a fix. Has anyone protested against Village Road?
Yeah.
Who?
First of all, the residents.
They shut down Village Road yet?
No, they protested.
They shut down Village Road yet?
They protested.
They made noise, man. That's what we used to do. There's nothing happening.
It's a spark.
Is Village Road sped up yet, the construction?
We know it's a spark. So once the spark starts, then it's going to start.
Has it finished in December yet?
Listen, Cecil,
Will it be finished in January?
Hopefully.
Cecil, I want to say good morning to my good Mitchell family who promised to hog tie me if I try start any real revolution in this place. Good morning, Mitchell family, and good morning to the Hasty family who I know will be right behind them with the rope.
Mm.
There's some of us that there's some of us doing the work, Cecil.
Who?
There's some of us talking. And there's some of us agitating, not just putting posts up in the road and buying t-shirts. People are trying to shift the culture. Like I gonna say this morning.
Go ahead.
Right? We're going to get into, in fact, I want to say to the Texans, a couple of Texans here and to the callers, I think we're talking migration this morning, right?
But are you still talking about migration?
I hope so.
But the thing is, Aaron, I know we're talking migration, but I think that we have a taxing situation at hand. Look at the scores of murders that we had lately. I think the Minister of National Security, this is a major, major, major issue.
But we talk in migration, right? Because when we talk in migration, hopefully, this is my position, putting on the table now, we'll see that our migration crisis is rooted in a larger crisis, right?
Mm-hmm.
That larger crisis is a crisis of governance. And that we're not going to solve that migration crisis until we get to the root of the governance crisis. I put it to you right now, right? Mm. We're going to talk today about a series of videos purporting to come out of Abaco, Andrus, Hub Island, Eleuthera, right? All of those videos document unregulated housing projects or unregulated construction for housing, right? In unregulated land, whether crown land, private land, land people ain't supposed to be living on.
Mm.
Right? That's a crisis in governance. Spoke to some gentlemen over the last week since we had our last show. The position put on the table was Bahamians don't want to do the work. Bahamians are not taking the job. So I say, why? Is it because of a lack of pay, low wages, illegal wages, right? You trying to push people to minimum wage for what is essentially skilled labor? Is it that? The person said, no, it's not that. It's this. It's that when a laborer, when a worker from New Providence is hired for a family island project, that Bahamian is expected to find their own housing, that they have to pay for their own housing when they go to the island. The migrant who is being hired, this is what the gentleman is telling me, is either willing to live in substandard conditions, is willing to make their own housing arrangements in the bush, right? Whether it's a top town, whether it's a tent town, a shanty clapboard shanty town, mm-hmm. they're willing to do that. They're willing to experience these lower or poor conditions for the work. And he's saying that's why Bahamians are not taking the jobs.
Are we talking about Abaco directly?
No, we're talking about Family Island generally.
Okay.
Right? Watch this. We have a housing crisis. We don't have sufficient housing options to match the pace of development. That sounds weird. You can't house the construction workers you need to do the work.
Agreed.
You can't house Bahamians. Before you stop to say that migrants are taking all the housing or living in the bush, realize your first issue, which is you cannot house Bahamians, or worse, you are unwilling to create the conditions in which Bahamians can live and do the work. You don't care. You don't care about the Haitian migrant that's going to live in the substandard conditions because they flee in. And we talk about what they flee in as well, the conditions that they flee in. You don't care about the Bahamians either, that you have an actual obligation, a greater obligation to ensure that they have access to housing.
So is it the developer's responsibility to provide proper housing during the period of the construction? Question to you.
Well, I don't know if there's a legal or like a statutory duty for the employer to ensure that their migrant labor with work permits have access to government-approved housing. That's in law. For the Bahamian now, I don't think that's the case. But what it means for me, what it means is when the government signs off, when they have the nice little meeting with the refreshments and the crumpets and the suits, unless it's SPF, right? Has somebody sat down and said, well, okay, we're sitting here telling the people that 700 jobs for a period of a year and a half, where are those how much are those 700 people going to require housing? What is the housing inventory on the island as it stands? What are the temporary housing measures we're going to put in place for those people? As soon as you see the work permit, the first question you're supposed to ask is, well, where is the housing? Can we change the law so when the work permit is submitted, right, there is an indication of where that person is going to live, even if only temporarily, and when they change their housing, that they have to submit a change of address?
But then the question will be asked again is that, is the developers that are coming in to use this Bahamas as an opportunity to gain profit margins, is there an international raid coming into a country that one has to follow guidelines even within pay salaries?
No.
Or do they just come into a country and they said, what is your minimum wage?
There's no international
question for skill.
Right, there's no international raid. Countries get to, you know, there's no global body interfering with that. You set a minimum wage. And what the international body says is that, look, if you have a minimum wage, you can't pay nobody below that minimum wage. I see you coming in right now. No, there is an organization. One of the things I want to ask the Bahamian government, are you a part of the International Migration Review Forum 2022? And perhaps that is a space, right, where countries discuss things like that, like this is where we're going to set our minimum wage, and these are the factors that impact that. And one of those factors is the percentage of labor that is actually migrant labor, right? Like, that's something that you may discuss at that space, but is our government participating in these global mechanisms?
I see you and I hear you. I see we have a caller here and I want to engage the caller to answer exactly what you're saying. But I think you're hinting that our migrant crisis is tied to our housing crisis, and that perhaps if we solve our housing issue, we will no longer have a migrant issue.
Well, not that we will no longer have a migrant issue, right? But these particular elements of the migrant issue we can begin to resolve, right? There is, shanty towns persist not because migrants come. Shanty towns persist because Bahamians cannot access housing outside of the shanty town. That's why shanty towns exist. And migrants take advantage of what exists. Migrants, the majority of migrants are working.
Mm-hmm.
They could afford what the working class Bahamian could afford. The point is, housing is not available. If we had, if we say forget, the migrant doesn't exist, if we focus on ensuring that working class Bahamians, Bahamians living just above the poverty line, if we ensure that they have access to proper government-approved housing, then employers who are bringing in documented migrants, right, will have access to housing for those migrants. And then the question, then whenever you see people walking in the bush, you know it's a problem you have to go to right away.
Okay. The numbers today are 323-6232, 325-4316, 325-4259. And, of course, you can always text us at 422-GR96. And we go straight to the caller right now. And then we go to the text. Go ahead, caller.
A pleasant good morning, Mr. Durig, Ms. Green, and whoever else is there. Ms. Green, can you please give me a moment to voice my opinion?
Sparky, I could give you a moment.
Yeah, I know, because you mash it up. You like to mash up, man. You like to stomp on everybody.
Just mash up man down Wednesday.
Give us a break, Ms. Green, man. You can't
you be the only one. Go ahead, Sparky. Yeah. I can give you that 30 seconds.
You can't be the only one all the time. But anyway, Mr. Durig, in regards to our migrant problem, and we got a fascinating problem. We got a problem in ourselves, not even those that come into our country. In regards to New Providence and Rhode Island, you look on the map, New Providence and the chain of the Bahama Islands is one of the smallest islands in the Bahama chain. And from a small child, I'm 71 years old, I've been hearing this thing about us helping our family of islands. How could we ever help our family of islands when the population of the family of islands continue to migrate to New Providence and waiting for people to build their islands? For example, a person in Hidalgo, as big as Hidalgo is, they only got a couple of people there, but a big island. But then after they reach junior school or what after that, they have to come to New Providence to get further education. So mommy and daddy comes to New Providence to bring the child. The only time they ever go back to Hidalgo is if a regatta going on, if somebody down there die, if somebody getting married. So when the children come in, mommy and daddy, they meet somebody in New Providence from Exuma. Those children get married and they still in Nassau. Nobody's going to ever go back to fix the family of islands if the government moved into New Providence and then everybody wants to live here because of the hotels is here, the airport is here, the hospital is here, everything is here.
Sparky.
We are imploding on ourselves.
Sparky. That point you make right there, forget the airport, it's the hospital.
Please, you can talk for the whole week. Let me finish what I said.
Sparky, let's have a conversation, man. That's what we here for. I only get to row on MASH.
You cut, Sparky.
I only get to row on MASH down Wednesday.
You'd be waiting on Wednesdays to cut
No,
Sparky,
I'd be waiting on Wednesdays to have a...
You liberal. You free on Wednesdays.
To have a, I would say, more intense, but a more rigorous interrogation of the issues.
But on Tuesdays, you'd be so nice on Tuesdays. But on Wednesdays...
It's world news. As an ambassador to the Bahamas. I have to be a tourist ambassador to the global news.
I understand. Well, but, go ahead. Let's continue the conversation.
What I'm saying is this. It's a great point that Sparky was making. Mm-hmm. We make these points to expound and expand the conversation, Sparky. Mm-hmm. You can't do that and then shut the rest of us out. The point is that you're making, it's not the trivial things. This is not trivial why Family Islanders moved to New Providence. They moved to where the amenities are. They moved to where the services are. Sure. There was a time when trade was greatest, the economy was strongest, the capital was in the South, moved between Ragged, I think, Inagua, even Acklands, right? Mm. That, and then people migrated down there. People aren't lazy, they aren't uninspired. The people are migrating to where they have greater access to the things they and their children need. It is a responsibility of the state. Given, I'm going to add, the political class and the merchant class would like to hog up the spotlight. It's their responsibility to create environments where people can access the things they need and do the things they need to do.
Mm-hmm. Let's read your text before you go back to the next call.
All right. To the text of the texted Howard, I took down your information. I will share it with him. Why did 40 people arrive at A&E at one time? I'd really like to know how unusual it is to have 40 patients in A&E. Saying they all had non-communicable diseases doesn't really tell us much. We know, for example, that COVID has a greater negative impact on people with non-communicable diseases. Were the 40 arrivals all test negative? Did they all test negative for COVID with a PCR test? That's a very interesting inquiry.
It's a good question.
And I wonder if the public has an opportunity to engage the Ministry of Health, PHA, those responsible.
You think the minister would respond to that? There you go.
I think the minister should.
He doesn't say it's non-communicable diseases, so that's the answer.
Right. If the minister himself doesn't, there should be a team prepared to engage the public with these questions.
You know that our minister promised that there's going to be a COVID update on the 5th of every month. It's the 18th.
You sure that they didn't discontinue that when they discontinued some of the COVID services?
No. Remember, it was daily. And when they discontinued, they say, okay, we'll do it once a month. That ain't happening.
He needs to schedule with the press secretary.
Yeah.
Aaron, if the man said he wasn't going to do the job, they would have got someone else to do the job the next day, and the first man would have been without that money or job. No, it don't work like that, man. It don't work like that. First of all, you stand together. You need solidarity. Second of all, you make it a public issue. You make it a public issue. Another text, Miss Green, you're so right. I live on Abaco, and that's what's going on. Another text, we have a migrant issue. Bahamians live here, so housing for construction workers is mute. Let's stop with the work permits. We don't need to bring all these people in for construction. If we solve our migrant issue, we will solve our housing issue. You have it backwards. No, dear texter.
It's a boom in Abaco, and it's a boom in Harbor Island, where unemployment is near nil. Where anyone who wants a job in Abaco and anybody who wants a job in Harbor Island can get one. And in fact, there's a shortage of labor, and they're begging people to come to Abaco to work. Mm-hmm. Just had no place to house them.
But the thing about it is, I hear a lot of times, Aaron, where persons were saying that, we don't need any more persons to come in the country. We don't need any more people to come in the country. But that's far from the truth. Mm-hmm. Any expanding nation or a nation that's growing needs that level of growth, whether it's internal or external. I mean, this is just the way it is.
Absolutely. And the question is our population size, let's say not Bahamians, but the people resident total in the Bahamas, is it large enough to propel the economy that we have forward? Is the workforce large enough? And that's something we need our statisticians to tell us. But listen, let's go back to the line. They call us, hold the line. I got to read the series of texts. It's been here long.
I taught you to read all the texts.
No, I ain't read all yet. This one had to be separated. This one, they're very upset.
I understand.
Good morning, Aaron and CA. No disrespect, but before y'all even start talking, I best turn you all off. Because I ain't into hearing no misinformation. Not today. Y'all should work for KGB. Just hope y'all ready for these new breed Haitians. I sighed because I don't even like saying that term. Who ain't nothing like any of us. But before I turn y'all off, I found out about the soon-to-be shanty town on PI 2021. Call me if you want a real conversation and proof. I can also tell you what happens to Bahamians if they try this. If they try what? If they try...
That sounds like the guy from the party with the C and the last name Ben. I don't know.
No, listen. Hold on. It gets better.
There's more?
There's more. They're very upset. Mm. They're very upset. Y'all mash up social media. People better realize Haitians do not buy newspapers or pay for ads or pay taxes. All they do is deplete our U.S. reserve by sending money out of the country. So keep stereotyping, criticizing, and victimizing Bahamians. Do your own investigation first while you on this air.
No, they hurt. They vex.
They're very upset. This earth, be honest. Mm-hmm. Dear Texter, I can just smell frustration from your text.
Hey, Vex.
You're very upset. So upset that you have misrepresented the truth greatly.
Mm. Misinformed.
But I can read your text for you. Let me tell you something. Haitians pay taxes. Everybody here pays taxes. That's like the point. They pay taxes. And I'm at the point now where I'm going to throw the question on the table. With the status of NIB, with technocrats claiming it's near collapse... Is it to the government's benefit to allow undocumented migration to continue unabated if employers are paying the NIB contributions of these undocumented migrants?
What are conspiracy theories? So you think it's in order for government to pay its bills?
I mean, I would not entertain it, but for the urgency with which those technocrats attached to NIB disregard the current political conventions, speak out of turn, raise the issue when the prime minister say there is no issue.
Well, think about it like this, Aaron. Those persons that are here currently in the country on work permits, they're on work permit, but they also have to contribute to the NIB. They're contributing to the NIB, and they cannot, I said cannot, receive any benefit from NIB. So you think about it like this. What are the statistics of those persons that would work permits and that are contributing to the NIB that cannot collect a dollar from NIB? So where's this money going?
Anyway, we have to go to a commercial break. I hear you. Call us. I'm going to patch you in as soon as we come back.
That's my bad.
Yeah, that's your bad because you should read that text a long time.
Yeah, I should have.
That's okay, though. All right, Matt. He's family.
Texas family too. I believe I know them.
You know, I believe they might be bright skinned ones. But that's a different thing altogether.
Listen, we're going to a break. You guys, please stay tuned. Call us, stay tuned. On the clock, Guardian Radio AM, Wednesday, mash up with Ian Munnings. We'll be right back.
Always on the go? Miss the show? You can now listen to Guardian Radio talk shows anytime, anywhere on Spotify and YouTube by searching Guardian Radio 96.9 FM or by entering the name of your favorite show. You can also listen by logging on to guardiantalkradio.com and clicking on the podcast tab. Guardian Radio, continuing to provide you with fresh news and smart talk anywhere, anytime, all day.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to On the Clock with Aaron Green, C.A. Neary, and of course Ian Munnings. We have our mashup Wednesday, and we are going straight to the calls because we didn't include them in the conversation, and we want to. And I'm going to blame my cousin Aaron for that. But let's go with callers. First caller there is. How you doing, caller?
Yes, good morning, Mr. Neary, Ms. Green, and to
Mr. Munnings.
Mr. Munnings, yeah. Mm-hmm. I want to disclose some loopholes, right? You say the Haitians pay taxes. Of course they do when they go in Subawalu. But what I've noticed here in the inner city, there are numerous small businesses owned by Haitians, right?
Mm-hmm.
You go in the store and you never get a receipt.
What?
So I'm tell, telling you, man, so they sell, you know, like fruits, vegetables, and there's canned goods, et cetera. You never get a receipt. There's numerous of them. There's numerous of them. All right?
Mm-hmm.
So you never get a receipt, and you don't see the VAT. But I know they mightn't be grossing $100,000 a year. I don't know what they're grossing, but this is a loophole. Also, this is something I've noticed. So I just want you to be aware of this. And as far as the work permits,
mm-hmm.
I don't know if Mr. Munnins could check this out, but, you know, I used to bring, my mother used to bring in the Jamaican guys, and I brought in one just last year
mm-hmm.
to pay for the work permit, and I had it renewed. But what I'm saying is, even the ones that work when my mom was here,
mm-hmm.
he came back and he got his national insurance. They contributed for years, and they come back and they get what they're supposed to get from national insurance. So I don't know where that concept comes from, that immigrants who contribute to national insurance don't have no reason to, I mean, don't get money back from national insurance. But I'm quite sure, and I could call my Jamaican friend and verify that, because Tony has retired, and he came back, and he got money. He's entitled to money.
Mm-hmm.
It's just up to them to, once they document all their payments, et cetera, these guys are paying national insurance.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted to drift on to something that I'm very skeptical about and suspicious about. The fact that you have just the government carrying patients to doctor's hospital. I'm afraid to go to doctor's hospital because of the expense. So the taxpayers' money is paying this, right?
Yes.
And so what I'm saying is, can we have some numbers, some figures as to how much this would cost the taxpayer? Because versus, you know, like I'm glad that they brought some new wards on stream, but why would like for the government to disclose the amount of money that they're funneling to doctor's hospital is because they're neglecting the Bahamian people. And one of the things that I would like to see the hospital implement before I die is they can put an MRI machine in the hospital. And most people, anyone who disagree with it is a fool. Because what happens is you can catch diseases in its track if you provide services with the MRI. You could have medical intervention versus a person just coming in and you just allowing them to die. I mean, you could have caught something when they first had initial symptoms. So let me give, even as far as the PCR test biosecurity paradigm that they have created. When my fiance went in there to help my son, she was in labor, and she was told to go and get a PCR test before she entered the maternity ward. They said that doctor's hospital PCR paradigm is closed at 6 o'clock. She had to ride around and sell and got a test for about 160.
While she was in labor?
Yes, 160.
It don't make any, look here, you don't have to explain nothing else.
Yeah, but yeah, when I'll finish it, please.
Yeah, man, finish.
A pregnant lady who went up subsequently told me that she carried on by and they gave her the test right there. So I don't know what the disparity in this paradigm is. And I got a joke for you. As a matter of fact, I didn't even know we had a Minister of Health, but I know we have a global script reader, all right, in Mr. Darwin. That's all we have, a script reader. Bless it.
Yes, sir. I'm glad you finished. All I'm going to say is we don't even need to hear any more from you say a pregnant woman in labor presents for delivery and they tell her she have to go find a PCR test before she could get into the ward. You, the hospital.
Mm.
It's two things I expect you to have constantly. Toilet paper and PCR tests. You don't have neither.
I was going to say bread, but then it can be different.
You do.
Because I like the hospital bread. Yeah. But we have another telephone call here.
Good morning, caller.
Go ahead, caller. Caller, can you hear me? There's nothing there, producer? Move on to the next caller then. Caller, can you hear me? Caller, can you hear me? No?
Hold on. Give it a second. Sometimes it just take a second.
I don't know. Really hang
up. Gone.
So go ahead, Aaron.
All right. So we got some text. Let's get another text. This one. Aaron and CA, Lincoln is the chosen one. You guys aren't doers. You're only talkers. Talking fool is a very serious thing. Power to the people. Dear texter.
Chosen one.
Listen, don't go around the place harassing people, forcing your way onto private property to terrorize people who you think are weaker than you and can't fight back or can't do anything about it.
The chosen one.
Don't do that. That's not the path to follow, Texter. Okay? That's not the path to follow.
You don't hear the word.
Well, I want to know, they grow any food yet?
You don't hear the word chosen one.
I heard it.
You weren't stuck on that?
I'm very concerned about
you,
that.
If you're concerned, I am terrified.
Who chose him?
Is he chosen? I mean, I don't know. That reminds me of the horror movie Rosemary Baby. The chosen one.
My boy.
Yeah.
Anyway, listen, I don't want people to think we're making fun of them.
I'm making fun of them.
That's,
You might not be making fun. I just make fun of your face.
No, man, because I feel I am hesitant because...
Be decent, that's why.
I want the people who are so frustrated
mm-hmm. I frustrated
with their current condition that they would turn to any means necessary.
Mm.
Those people don't deserve to be laughed at. They deserve their energy to be channeled somewhere where it will be effective.
See, and not abused. You can cause me change the conversation.
No, let's talk about migration.
I know you, I can still stick on migration. And I know we have a particular agenda. But when you're saying things like that, I am concerned about a violent revolution in a point of this desperation,
yeah.
The Haman's feeling at this present time, right?
Feeling
and it. Especially when our government, right, is their response to the general public's concern is inadequate. And because it's not adequate, it's making heroes out of people who should not be even entertained.
Yes.
And these persons who are now becoming heroes, right, are spreading a narrative that is potentially violent,
mm-hmm.
You know, and potentially so egregious that we need to be concerned of a violent outbreak. And that I'm concerned about, right? Because mm-hmm. I heard a Keith Spell response and said, no. Your response is inadequate.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you fan in the flames to make that other person a hero when we trying to cut that out altogether.
Yeah.
Right? I'm hearing the government's response and they say, no. You're not answering the needed questions and providing the answers that is needed. And that's why I am concerned. Because these people now knocking on people's doors and pushing people's doors and calling people names. See, that is a concern. That's a major breach. And any sensible and decent and civilly minded Bohemian is supposed to be alarmed and say, no, you went too far.
You're wrong. You went too far.
You're wrong.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I 100% agree with that.
I don't have any space for people who will go and attempt to terrorize people they think they could take advantage of.
Mm.
Or people who are weaker than them. Or worse, to create this idea that because you are of Haitian descent, I am not required to follow the law.
That's what lady asked. Like, Haitians can't live on PI? That's what a woman asked. Yeah.
But these are
paying my rent and paying my bills. She's trying to say, I can't live on PI.
But go on, Ian.
The thing about it is, these are human beings. At the end of the day, these are human beings. And if they're in the country legally and they're paying their work permits and wherever they decide to live, if they're paying for it to live there, then there should be no problem. But the fact of the matter, these rogue people are going to persons' houses. And then they have kids and not being mindful of the kids that are there. And these are some of the things that we're trying not to ensue these people to continuously do. And you know, he has this rogue kind of thing that wants to let the Bahamian people believe it's them against us versus this against that. The Haitian problem is not a now problem. This problem, we have inherited this problem. This migration of persons didn't just start now. The Haitians were the Jews of the Caribbean. They were the ones which started within the freedoms of us as a people in the Caribbean. And they not only just came to migrate here in the Bahamas, but they also had kids here back from 1950s. So they were having kids. So everybody literally in the Bahamas, just about, if not all, have somebody, a relative in their family that are of Haitian descent. This is the fact.
Well, I know what you're trying to say. I mean, Aaron have high cheekbones.
Yeah, well, I see it with pretty eyes, the Dominican side.
I know what you're trying to say.
Saying, all of me from Hispaniola are half Haitian, half Dominican.
You see? I am with y'all.
What's up,
mate? I am with y'all.
Look here.
Y'all some Nicaraguan thing.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The whole island.
You know who's from Inagua via Cat Island?
Mm-hmm.
Papa Dog.
Yeah. Well, that's what they say.
Yeah. That's what you're born in. That's what they say.
That's what they said.
Yeah. That's what it is.
That's what it is.
Okay.
That's the irony. So you went back far. I'm going to say, yeah, the relationship between the Bahamas and Haiti is rich and complex and beautiful, right? In 2003 we are out of time for this hour.
Yeah, we'll be over the next hour.
At COB in 2003, they had their symposium, and there was a wonderful panel. And the panelists said, look, 50 years ago, so from 2003, 50 years ago,
mm-hmm.
there were as many Bahamians in Haiti as there were Haitians in the Bahamas,
wow.
Right? And I think it's post that point that something changed.
That's why Haiti had all kind of Fergusons. But anyway.
I thought the Fergusons were farm roadmen.
Fergusons.
Anyway, listen, guys, we're going to a break. We're going to end this first half of the On the Clock Guardian Radio AM mashup Wednesday. When we get back, we're going to have more conversation, more entertainment. And listen, you don't have to agree with us to call in and share your thoughts. You just got to follow the rules.
Yeah.
That's all. We don't mind a little back and forth, especially on a Wednesday. That's what the mashup and the mashdown is for.
Yeah.
So please, stay tuned. We'll be right back after the break.